next case is Bortolotti versus Universal Terrazzo and Tile Company. Again, this is case number A171024, Bortolotti versus Universal Terrazzo. And counsel for the appellant may approach.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Adam Walker, and I represent the defendants and appellants in this case, Universal Terrazzo and Tile Company and Acuity Insurance. And this case concerns an alleged injury by Mr. Bortolotti in June of 2013 to his left shoulder. The case went to trial. The court listened to the evidence. The court did conclude that Mr. Bortolotti sustained a compensable injury to his left shoulder within the course and scope of his employment.
And you're not disputing that on appeal?
We are not. And as a result, the judge looked towards awarding benefits under the Act and how to go about doing that. Those are the issues we are disputing. With regard to awarding benefits, the court and our primary argument is the court attempt to assess Mr. Bortolotti's average weekly wage. And in doing so, and at all material times, Mr. Bortolotti was the sole shareholder of an S corporation. At all material times throughout this proceeding, it was his burden to prove his average weekly wage so that benefits could be awarded. At trial, and you'll note in the trial court's order, no tax return was offered into evidence. With regard to the evidence that the court had to determine average weekly wage, Mr. Bortolotti testified that the S Corporation had net income of $198,000 and change in 2013, of which he took a weekly draw of approximately $3,600. However, after the trial, the court examined that $198,000 figure, divided it by 52 weeks, and recognized that the amount that she came up with did not equal the amount of the weekly draw that Mr. Bortolotti testified to.
Off by $100 or so.
Right, which caused her to question the testimony. Now, with regard to other evidence that the court received, the defendants offered part of the tax return of 2013 from Mr. Bortolotti showing the amount of income that he, of wages that he showed the IRS for which he paid taxes in the amount of $3,950. Now, while the court found that that was not reflective of what his income would have been in 2013, the court's disagreement with the defendant slash appellant's representation of Mr. Bortolotti's income should not result in a finding that Mr. Bortolotti sustained his burden of proving his average weekly wage.
Was there evidence, and I understand you offered this exhibit, I think it was 51?
Correct.
Was there any testimony or evidence given as to what the $186,000 and some change qualified production activities income was?
I don't believe so, Judge, but you will note in our brief that we argued that that's money or an income figure that's used to get a deduction on your tax return.
It's not necessarily reflective of wages paid to.
That's the point we tried to make in our brief.
So even if that was a profit for the company, which they get some tax benefit from, because of the type of manufacturing that they're doing domestically, right, is my understanding of that deduction. That does not equate with wages that he would have paid income taxes on personally.
That's correct. And, Judge, as you will note in our reply brief, in response to what appeared to be Mr. Bortolotti's adoption of those figures, we noted that sole shareholders, while the Nebraska Supreme Court hasn't dealt with this, sole shareholders in an S corporation from several tax rulings are not considered to be self-employed individuals where they can simply take that income and bootstrap it as if it was their own.
And we don't have the entire 2013 tax return to know what income was claimed individually and taxes paid thereon.
Correct, and that was an issue that the Workers' Comp Court came up with in their order stating that, hey, while we do have a figure here that Mr. Bortolotti testified to, we don't have a tax return from which I can see that appropriate deductions and expenses were taken from that figure. In fact, with regard to the tax return, you mentioned Exhibit 51. The one page of Exhibit 51 is, to my knowledge, the only part of the tax return that's part of the appellate record.
So how did the court get to where it got to? What is your argument against how the court eventually computed
I might be paraphrasing and misquoting in some regard, however, but the court stated something to the effect of the only consistent figure the court could find that would support Mr. Bortolotti's average weekly wage was the amount of the average weekly wage that he pled in his operative petition, which was $1,399.
And that wasn't the operative petition because there was a third amended petition, and she actually got that number out of the amended petition, which had been filed earlier, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
I think she referred, the trial judge referred to petitions, plural, didn't she?
I think that's fair.
And she took judicial notice of those documents,
yes.
Marked them as exhibits.
Yes.
They were made part of the record.
Yes.
And my review of the record shows that that your client and the prior insurer admitted to one of the pleadings, and that's in the that was marked as an item and judicial notice taken.
I think certain things were admitted to. I do not believe the average weekly wage was admitted to.
Well, I believe the very first petition that alleged an injury in 09 and alleged $1,300 of weekly wage was admitted to.
Okay. I will defer to you.
But that was a 2009 injury?
Right.
Different injury, different time period. And it's a different insurer, too.
Because he had several.
Yeah, right. He had five. And certainly if that's a past petition, it wouldn't operate as a judicial admission at that point.
Can a court take judicial notice of a disputed fact like average weekly wage?
I would say not without proof. And that was our issue. Allegations are not evidence. And when the court finds that there is no evidence upon which she can rely to find average weekly wage, relying on an allegation under those circumstances, especially when it's the issue's in dispute, to us is clearly wrong and needs to be reversed. To us, the manner in which the trial court handled this is analogous to the trial court's decision in the whole case that got reversed on appeal. It was the same form of analysis where the lower court strained itself to find an average weekly wage when none was readily available.
Which case are you referring to?
Hull, H-U-L-L.
That was a self-employed individual.
Correct, which is different than this case.
Do you have a better case that involves a corporation and a shareholder for your
We don't have a better case that shows what the court should have done with the S Corporation money, but what we do have is the case law in our brief that states that a sole shareholder of an S Corporation, that S Corporation's money income is not the sole shareholder's income. What we argue the court should refer to is the amount of wages that he actually reported to the IRS and paid taxes on. Now, while the court found that non-reflective, that doesn't result in Mr. Bortolotti sustaining his burden.
Now, the information you're sharing about the S Corporation, that comes from other case law.
True.
Or tax regulations.
True.
No evidence in this case about how this corporation worked, was there?
No, other than its income for that year, as testified to by Mr. Bortolotti.
Did he also testify that when being asked by his counsel at trial about a line item on the tax return that we don't have, about $12,000 in wages, do you recall that?
I saw that, and yeah, it's not supported by the record. That's the only thing I can say.
By what in the record? Or
by
no
by
record?
Documentary evidence in the record.
What is a court to do when there is no evidence provided with regard to average weekly wage, but there is an injury. I believe there was a permanent impairment rating given, right, at 15%, if I'm remembering right. So we know he had an injury. We know he has a permanent impairment, to which, in most circumstances, you do get a monetary award. But if there is not sufficient evidence of the average weekly wage, then does the bituminous casualty case control?
You know, Judge, I will defer to you on the application of that case to these facts. I would say it's Mr. Bortolotti's burden to prove that. In our estimation, he failed to prove that burden, and as a result, I think the court would have to potentially look at the minimum amounts that would be entitled to under the Act, especially when you look at the amount he actually reported that he paid wages on with the IRS. Now, quickly, I'm running out of time here, but I'd like to get into the future medical. The future medical, here's the thing. With regard to the MRIs, there is no showing of reasonable necessity to alleviate the pain. Even the all it says is that they will take MRIs to see if further treatment is necessary to treat the injury. With regard to the MRIs and with regard to the future treatment, there is no showing that either of those things would be reasonably necessary to alleviate the pain, which is a requirement for future medical under Nebraska law. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Walker.
Thank you.
All right. How much time did we go over? All right. We'll add that to Mr. Thomas' time for the appellee. And Mr. Thomas, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel, students. I'm John Thomas from McGrath North, and I'm here proudly representing Terry Bortolotti in this appeal case. We're here asking the court to affirm, number one, the indemnity award of $24,570, the average weekly wage of $728. The future medical, the medical that he paid himself because Acuity wouldn't pay it, and in addition, on my cross-claim, we want another $36,000 that should have been awarded that wasn't.
Thomas, why the mystery around your client's wages? Why not produce a tax return? Why not produce wage stubs or some evidence of what he was actually receiving as a wage?
Well, line 17 in his tax return, which he testified to.
But did not produce.
Did not produce. And line 17 is a very significant, well, if we were to produce the tax return, what's the line that the court would have went to, which is line 17, which is the, quotes, net income from the corporation that Mr. Bortolotti has to pay taxes on?
How do we know that?
How do we know it? Well,
how do we know what line 17 is? I mean,
because he testified to it. He testified.
He said that was
well,
the income of the corporation was his testimony. It's not the same as wages.
Well, I understand that, but according to Hull, he's the sole stockholder of that corporation, and the corporation doesn't pay tax on the money that it receives.
But in Hull, they produced a tax return.
Excuse me?
In Hull, they produced a tax return.
Well, I understand that, but...
So the court at least had a tax return to work
with. Well, yeah. Well, and the court should have known line 17 is a net figure. You look on your tax returns, your 1040s, and you're going to see a line 17 for S corporations, and what you're going to see is that is an income that comes from an S corporation to this man that he has to pay taxes on. And
you know, we might know that outside of this record because we have filled out tax returns, but what in this record tells us that is actually the case?
His testimony.
His testimony was the $180-some thousand was income of the corporation and that he took a weekly draw.
Well,
that was his testimony.
That appeared on line 17, which he was taxed on,
He didn't even say that in his testimony. I mean, I'm not trying to be difficult here. It's just the trial judge said, I'm perplexed by this lack of evidence here. And then she goes to the pleadings to arrive at the average weekly wage.
Right. And what she did was, she probably didn't understand the significance of line 17.
There was no testimony or document of it.
The testimony is, and I can read it to you, and that appears at page 48 of the transcript. All right, let's talk about your average weekly wage. Now look at your tax return, and I see that. Did Universal file a tax return 213? Answer yes. It shows that there was a joint tax return that you and your wife filed, correct. And under item 17, it shows rental, real estate, S corporations, and attached Schedule E, and that number is $198,000. And is that the income that the corporation would have received for the work for 2013? Answer yes. And would you take a draw weekly or perhaps monthly from that $1,987 as your income from the corporation? Yes. And that number was $3,625 as a weekly income, and that you were receiving in 13, as I understand it, yes.
And if he was taking a draw as income, then he should have had a W-2 to show that he took wages in that manner.
No, you don't.
Okay. What you're talking about is you're providing an amount of profit that you have to report as the S corporation's income, right? The S corporation's income doesn't equate with what an employee takes as wages.
What happens is on the tax return, the corporate tax return is a K-1, and the K-1 itemizes the income and deductions for the corporation. The corporation is not taxed on the income. It's passed on, in this particular instance, to the stockholders, and this is the sole stockholder. He doesn't get that document. What he gets is a K-1 from the corporation, which is then sent to the IRS, and then that K-1 is attached to his return that shows that this is the amount on line 17. The fact of the matter is, we know it's a net number because the court didn't say we know that $198,000 is on line 17, and that was a net number because you don't have, and you referred to Exhibit 51, you don't have a Schedule E unless you have the tax returns that Mr. Bortolotti filed. They know that the $198,000 is a net number on that tax return. You haven't heard them dispute that, and they can't dispute it because the fact that they've got Exhibit 51 is it's part of, you file two Schedule E's for a corporate return, and they come from the K-1. And they only gave you Schedule E for past, right. The other E,
have anything else.
Well, you're right, but we shouldn't need anything else because that in and of itself establishes that they know that the $198,000 that he put on line 17 is a net figure. And according to Hull, that's money that comes from the corporation. Corporation doesn't file a tax return.
Hull was a self-employed individual.
Pardon me?
Hull was a self-employed individual. That's a different animal.
Do I understand from that you don't think that Hull applies in the situation of a sole stockholder?
I get that.
Oh, well, I will. I mean,
I don't disagree with anything you're saying in general, based upon my own independent information. I'm just stuck with a record that doesn't tell us much. The trial judge was frustrated by that. She discredited, essentially, your client's testimony. So what do we do with that? And can you justify how she arrived at the average weekly wage?
Well, she gave the wrong reason for the right decision. And that happens all the time. Her decision carries a jury verdict. And there's all kinds of cases, and I can cite you to a case that says that...
You're still good.
Oh, good. I got 23 seconds.
Yeah, you got that.
And that for the wrong reason, it's a case that's...
We are familiar with the proposition.
Okay.
What about the result in, I believe Judge Bishop referred to it earlier, the bituminous, if I'm saying that correctly, case? The court said the trial court erred as a matter of law and said no benefits.
Well, yeah, they said no benefits. But what they didn't say, that's because that he had a side deal that had nothing to do with the corporation that he was a stockholder of. And furthermore, the fact that if the income of the corporation isn't passed through on the tax return to its stockholders, then in bituminous they could have said, this doesn't apply. There's no reason for them to get to that situation. And the fact of the matter is, you've got a tax return, you've got a comp return that covers him in his capacity as a stockholder, as a president, so he's covered. I mean, that's bituminous.
Now, in this case, your client testified he's an employee of the corporation, didn't he?
And a stockholder, yes.
And a sole stockholder. And then there was some testimony about $12,000 in wages from the tax return that we don't have.
Right.
And what was his explanation on that?
Well, that part of it was his wife's, part of it was his, I believe.
Didn't he testify he had no wages?
Wages per se. He had income from the corporation for $198,000.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you.
All right. The case will be taken under advisement. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. And you are excused.